There is a world where witches rule the northern skies, where ice bears are the bravest of warriors, and where every human is joined with an animal spirit who is as close to them as their own heart.
Are we going to see the child?
I should think so.
But this world is dominated by the Magisterium, which seeks to control all humanity, and whose greatest threat is a golden compass and the one child destined to possess it.
Well, just a little bit of the trailer from The Golden Compass. Boy, this thing is really causing a stir, apart from the fact that it appears to be probably the holiday season blockbuster in the movie theaters, The Golden Compass, with an all-star cast. In addition to that, it's got a stir going kind of under the table because the author of the book upon which the film, the forthcoming December film, is based, is, in fact, a very outspoken atheist. Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer joins us. He's director of admissions at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the blog The Burr in the Berg. Scott, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. And you?
Very well. Very well. It's great to be on the show.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Coming to you live this Wednesday, November the 28th. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Scott, just because a book is written by or a film is produced by an outspoken atheist, is that reason enough for Christians to steer clear of it entirely?
Well, no, I would say no, that in itself would not be a substantial reason to just avoid it. Just because the author is an atheist, even an outspoken militant atheist, without first examining the content of the work of art we're talking about, I think that history has shown that a lot of unbelievers have produced some very edifying works of art, and even modern atheists can sometimes have some penetrating insights about human nature and even unintentionally sometimes support the biblical witness. So I wouldn't automatically say because the author or the creator of a work of art is not a Christian or is an atheist that it should automatically thus be avoided. I think we should look at each circumstance individually and evaluate the content of the piece of artwork that we're talking about.
How, in a nutshell, do you evaluate the content of The Golden Compass?
Well, this is one of those examples where I think that an outspoken atheist or an unbeliever has produced a work of art that is quite potentially harmful and probably generally should be avoided. I wouldn't say that as a rule of thumb across the board, but in this case, because... And what makes this different is that Philip Pullman hasn't just produced a work of art that, maybe has underlying some of his materialist worldview, but otherwise has some very redeeming artistic values. Whatever we might say about the quality of his writing, and in my opinion, he has put together a pretty ripping yarn. Nonetheless, he's used this. I think what ruins it, frankly, is that even non-Christian critics have observed this as well. He becomes very preachy. It becomes not so much in the first volume of the trilogy, but progressively it gets more overtly, where he's just sort of propagandizing, if you will, his worldview, which is basically a materialist, atheistic worldview. It just becomes very explicit and almost ruins any opportunity for anybody else to enjoy it.
Tell us the story in a nutshell of the that includes The Golden Compass.
Sure.
And in particular, if you would, how it is Pullman is able through the trilogy to incorporate God as a character and then, at least according to rumor, eventually kill him off.
Yeah. I haven't seen the film, so we are talking about the books here.
Sure.
And there are three volumes, and the first one is The Golden Compass, and which is what it's titled in the American market. In England, I think it was called The Northern Lights. The second volume is called The Subtle Knife, and the third volume is called The Amber Spyglass. And it really is the story of a girl, a heroine. And in this way, I mean, many of the interviews, and if anybody has kind of followed this story, one of the things you would learn is that Pullman has a particular loathing for C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia. So he is very intentionally trying to write an anti-Narnia here. And so just as Lewis has a prepubescent girl that is arguably the protagonist of the Chronicles of Narnia, here he's got a prepubescent girl, Lyra, who is the protagonist in this story. And it kind of follows her. And I don't know how much of the plot summary you want me to give, but to try to put it into a sentence or two, the world that he creates is sort of parallel, parallel universe. It takes place in partly in England and Oxford, similar but not exactly the same as the Oxford we would recognize, and that's where it begins. And the world is sort of very recognizable. That world, that parallel universe, is very recognizable to us because there's a church, which is called the church. Sometimes it's called the magisterium. Other times, which is a term that the Roman Catholic Church uses to speak of the teaching office of their bishops. The word bishops and cardinals and pope, I mean, all of that, even the name John Calvin, all these names and words, which, I mean, he's not subtle. He's not doing what Lewis did and you know, really allegorizing. He's just being pretty blatant. The church is turns out to be a rather wicked organization. God is no God at all, but a rather weak sort of angelic being who is just old and senile and sadistic. And that particular version of God, which Pullman calls the authority, is strangling human creativity and repressing human initiative and free will and free thinking. And the heroic rebels, the scientists, are the ones who battle against God and against the church, and in the end they do kill God and thus begin to create a heaven on earth, a republic of heaven on earth. So it's very atheistic and very materialistic, and that's just scratching the surface of the story.
Is it that you say he isn't in terribly subtle? Is someone going to see The Golden Compass? Granted, no one has seen the film yet, but someone, if it's true to the first volume of the trilogy that Pullman wrote, are they going to catch all of this lack of subtlety, this kind of a very thin veneer of here I am writing the anti-Narnia, and here I am commenting as an atheist on what I consider to be the evil of organized religion and the church in particular?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have to be reading between the lines very hard at all. You don't have to read between the lines at all in any way to read The Golden Compass and understand that this man has an anti-church agenda, and perhaps even arguably anti-Catholic church agenda. And to be completely fair about it, I mean, The Golden Compass doesn't necessarily begin that way. But by the end of the book, the church is evil. There are really no redeeming characteristics to the church at all. I mean, it's kind of like how we would, you know, portray Nazis or something in a movie in the 50s or something. You know, they're just purely, purely bad. It really isn't until, say, the second one, and then especially in the third book, when it becomes very clear what's at play and who the villains are. But even in the first book, you can see that chaplains and bishops and people who are going to worship services are at least suspicious and suspect, and gradually are revealed to be evil.
Okay, I'm wondering whether or not Pullman has perhaps inadvertently become guilty even to a greater degree than the sin that he accuses C.S. Lewis of committing, and that is of thinly veiled allegory with a real agenda in mind of propagandizing.
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how Philip Pullman might respond to your statement there, but I think absolutely he is the pot calling the kettle all shades of black right here. Whatever Lewis might have been doing, and certainly Lewis was forthright in saying that he was trying to smuggle Christian doctrine into the minds of youth through fantasy, through a narrative, through the elements of fairy tale. And Pullman has, to some extent, done this as well. He has created a very imaginative world. In some ways, I think some aspects of his fantasy stories are more creative and interesting than many other books in the genre that I've read. So, I mean, he does have some skill in terms of weaving sort of this fantastic, wonderful world of magic and mystery. But, you know, I mean, I don't know, I don't even think he would say that he's that his agenda is hidden. I think it's very much out in the open, and to some extent, I think he's probably he delights in the controversy. You know, he has had some very, especially since he's British. You know, and I don't know about you, but a lot of my British friends are, you know, they tend to be very good at understating things. Well, Pullman isn't like that. You know, he says, "I'm out to destroy, you know, Christian belief. That's what I want." And, you know, that's what he says in interviews, and I think that is apparent from this trilogy as well.
It's Wednesday, November the 28th. I want to hear from you on the forthcoming movie, The Golden Compass, and the book trilogy, His Dark Materials, by Philip Pullman, an outspoken atheist. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or issues ETC at KFUO.org. Do you plan to see the movie? Do you plan to boycott it? Although, I don't think those boycotts ever work out too well. I think there was a boycott of the Da Vinci Code, and it made a couple $100 million nonetheless. Sometimes probably adds to the box office. Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer is our guest, director of admissions at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the blog The Burr in the Berg. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Does he succeed, do you think, Scott? I mean, as objectively as you can, looking at the books as you've read them, does he succeed in pointing out legitimate concerns that an unbeliever might have about the church?
Well, you know, if I want to try and be as equitable as possible, I mean, admittedly, Christians do not have a spotless record, and the Christian church does not is not above reproach in every way. Christians and Christian institutions have done wrong things and have harmed people. I don't really know anybody that's defending burning the Salem witches. I don't think the Spanish Inquisition is something that we all want to kind of get behind. You know, I mean, you know, I think that there admittedly have been some very terrible things done in the name of Christ. And so in that respect, that's what he's pointing to. He is pointing to persecutions of people who are different, persecutions of people whose beliefs would be considered blasphemous or heretical. And I don't think the church ought to be taking up the sword against false believers. So in that respect, he does have a good point. But he overstates his case. And there, I think, he actually harms his case because he parodies what should be taken seriously. If the church has done wrong, and we acknowledge that there are examples where the church has and still needs to be observed, and we need the curb of the law, bishops and priests and pastors can abuse that role in that situation. I don't deny that. I want to be very conscious of it. But I don't want to make it into a farce either by so overstating it and making every priest into a lech, you know, and every pastor into sort of a child abuser, molester, demoniac. By overstating it, he actually, I think, undercuts it.
I guess I'm wondering about the reaction of mainstream atheism to this. I
mean,
when famous atheists lately have been writing their books, and I'm thinking here about Sam Harris and others, mm-hmm. who are strident in their criticisms of Christianity, even their own fellow atheists have often said, look, they're overstating the case. It's not as bad as they've said, and we've got a better case than that to make against religion and God and things like that. I'm wondering whether there might be a similar reaction to Pullman's attempt here in print and in film to, as he has said, undercut the foundations of Christian belief.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, in fact, there have been atheists and people that probably share many of the beliefs, the underlying beliefs of Philip Pullman, but they feel that he's kind of cramming it down our throat in a way that is, it detracts from the story. What starts out that could be a really fascinating story, even if it, you know, came from a place that I would disagree with, he really removes any possibility of the general public enjoying it, you know, and trying to be objective, because he's just so very in your face about it. So I think that there has been a reaction from within the atheistic community, whatsoever of that there is, and realizing that he's not helping their cause. I don't think anybody's going to read the books of Philip Pullman and be convinced one way or another. I think the people who are already distrustful of the church and resentful toward Christianity are going to be confirmed in that. And I think the people who are believers and love the Lord Jesus are going to, if they read it, are going to be confirmed in their position. I think it's the sort of thing that is just so inflammatory. See, there's one thing that the general, whatever flaws there are with Americans, it seems to me that one of the traits of the general American populace is they don't tend to like extremism. And they tend to be more middle of the road on most things. And when he comes out with this extremist position, if it's unvarnished in the film, I think it's going to backfire on him big time, at least in the American audience.
And yet, I've seen the trailer for the thing. If I didn't, if I had no other knowledge of it, and was only thinking, okay, here I'm sitting in the movie theater before the main feature, and here's this amazing visual spectacle unfolding before me, and I don't know who Philip Pullman is, and I'm a fan of the fantasy genre, I'm going to go see this thing.
Yeah. I've seen the trailer in the theater, and I've looked at it on the internet, and I think it looks great. You know, I mean, he's got at least the production value of the trailer is really high. And he has nabbed, I mean, not Philip Pullman, the movie studio, New Line Cinema, they have nabbed some pretty bankable movie stars, too. I mean, the latest James Bond is in this, and Nicole Kidman, and, you know, I mean, there's some major bankable names in there. So, you know, but and from what I have read, not having seen the film, and from what I have read, the director of the movie has toned down, or even sort of, you know, so greatly softened the anti-Christian element, so as not to be such a offense to the Christian or believing community in America. Because yes, the Da Vinci Code scored well, but so did the Passion of the Christ, and I think that many American moviegoers would just be would blanch at the idea of going to a film that's marketed to children. I mean, they're marketing this to a younger audience. That's what it's supposed to be. These are young adult novels, although I think they can be enjoyed by older readers. But I mean, it is really targeted at that younger audience, and so I think a lot of parents, if they know this to be sort of virulently anti-religious, they're going to stay away. And the New Line Cinema producers know that, or at least feel that to be the case too.
I'm pretty sure they want the broadest possible audience they can get.
Yeah, they want. See, the thing about blockbuster movies like this is they also profit from repeat viewers. You know, if you get a bunch of, you know how kids like to hear the same story over and over again. Well, it's you know, kids go to a lot of these movies over and over again, or you know, they talk about it. Word of mouth spreads, and it looks like this is an expensive movie to make. So I'm sure that they're hoping for a big box office return. And from what I have read, they have significantly toned down or eliminated. And I think with the first book, you could probably pull that off. You could make the authority or the magisterium, it could sort of be just a metaphor for any dictatorial or tyranny. I think you could do that probably fairly easily with the first book. I don't know how that could be done without making major changes in the second and third volumes.
Okay, so finally, real quickly, there are going to be, and there already have been, subtle and not so subtle calls to just boycott the film altogether and to speak out as loudly as you can against it, things like that, coming from anywhere from culturally conservative to Christian circles. What do you make of all of that, Scott?
Well, I think you made a good comment earlier. I think that oftentimes these boycotts only draw more attention. It's, you know, there's an old saying that all publicity is good publicity. And, you know, they're getting a whole lot of publicity off this. And so people's curiosity is going to be piqued. You know, we can try to boycott this, but I don't think it's going to actually help the cause. I don't think those tend to work. Now, the question of whether conscientious believers and parents ought to go see the film, that's a bit of a sketchier question.
Okay, would you take your – I assume you're going to see it because we're going to want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
But are you going to take your kids to it?
I don't know. That's a very good question because for me, the big concern – because from what I've read, I'm not all that particularly worried about this movie. But that it would pique interest in the novels is perhaps the greater threat. This movie may be very innocent and you know, very wonderful and entertaining. But if it gets people to go buy those trilogies and, you know, and give them to their kids as Christmas gifts, and the kids then that young minds can be easily swayed. And so you know, my son is 12, so he's right in the target age here. We would definitely have some meaningful conversations before and after if I do take him.
Pastor Stiegemeyer, you're director of admissions at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Why should a man consider the vocation of pastor?
Well, I'm very glad you asked. Well, there's a tremendous need. You know, the world is full of people that don't know the life-giving message of forgiveness and eternal life. And a lot of people, very many people, like Philip Pullman, think they know what the church teaches, but what they propose is a straw man, is not really what the church is about. A lot of people maybe they've been burned or whatever, but they misunderstand who Christ is. He's not the authority in the sense that he's just about laws and rules. We have a very loving God, merciful God. So I would encourage anybody, any man that wants to serve as a preacher of the gospel and communicate that, to consider seminary. It's a noble thing to pursue, and he should pray about it and consult the guidance of his own pastor if he's considering this.
Folks, you can find out about studying for the pastoral ministry at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and look for information on Concordia Seminary St. Louis and Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, preparing Christ-centered cross-focused pastors for the 21st century, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Concordia Seminary St. Louis. Scott, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's a pleasure, Todd, always.
By the way, Scott authors the blog called Burr in the Berg. Spell it with two R's in both, in the first case and one R in the second case, and you'll get to the right place. Your phone calls and your email on the Golden Compass movie and the books after this break. It's audio open lines for the last 10 minutes of the program, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address this Wednesday, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Do you think Christians should boycott the film? Should they go see it? I want your answer to that question and your comments in general on The Golden Compass and its author, Philip Pullman, Outspoken Atheist, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This break is a very good time to call or to email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You know, there's always the law of unintended consequences, that the church, in reality, is not what the atheist, in his fantasy, thinks it is or wants to portray it as, and someone walking out of the theater saying, wow, that doesn't look like the church or the Christians or the Christian faith that I've ever seen. There's always that law of unintended consequences. We'll be right back. Your phone calls and your email after this.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. David Adams on why a man should consider the vocation of a pastor.
One, because there's nothing more important in the world than the proclamation of Christ and the gospel. And to be called to that work is the greatest of all the callings. And this leads us to the second point, I think, that if a man believes that God has called him to that work, then if God calls you to the greatest and most important work that can be done here in this life, then for the love of Christ and the joy of proclamation of the gospel, hopefully that man would respond in faith to that call.
You can find out more about becoming a pastor on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Look for information on Concordia Seminary St. Louis, Serving Church and World, and Concordia Theological Seminary Fort Wayne. Teach, reach, care.
Interracial marriage from God's perspective.
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Answers in Genesis Ministry. Ken, does the Bible have anything at all to say about interracial marriage?
Well, let's think about this carefully, Mark. How would you answer the following question? I'm going to list four combinations of married couples, and I want you to consider which one God would be against, according to the Bible. First, a Christian man with almond-shaped eyes and a Christian woman with Caucasian eyes. Second, a non-Christian man married to a non-Christian woman. Third, a Christian man with dark skin and a Christian woman with light skin. And fourth, a non-Christian Caucasian man married to a Christian Caucasian woman. You know, from a biblical perspective, it's the last one. The only one of those marriages that God speaks against in the Bible is the Christian marrying a non-Christian. This is what I'd call an interracial marriage. The saved race, if you will, marrying the unsaved race. Sadly, because so many Christians have been indoctrinated by evolutionary ideas, they think humans are divided into different physical races. Many end up concerned about people from so-called different races marrying rather than whether or not they are equally yoked spiritually, which is the most important thing in marriage.
More fascinating information on this topic is found in Ken Ham's booklet on the origin of the so-called races. In fact, he offers a Genesis solution to the problem of racism. The booklet's free by going to our website, answersradio.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark, host of Life Revised. Listen to my co-host, Michelle Bauer, and me as we talk about Christmas traditions. Begin thinking about your own traditions and get in the mood to approach the holidays with joyful expectations. Join Michelle Bauer and me as we discuss the ways our various Christmas traditions can point us to the true meaning of Christmas. Join us for Life Revised, because life is a series of revisions.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Go, my children, with my blessing, never alone.
Go, my children, with my blessing. It's one of the many songs on a new recording titled The Temba Girls with the Aaron Bodie Group. Jazz recording artist Aaron Bodie teamed with the girls' choir in South Africa to produce this new CD. And proceeds from this recording will benefit the Temba Trust, a nonprofit foundation that operates a girls' school and other educational and youth programs that serve South Africa's rural poor. For more information on the Temba Girls with the Aaron Bodie Group, check out our homepage, issuesetc.org. For a $25 donation to LCMS World Relief, you can get a CD with great music and also help South African children. Issuesetc.org, the Temba Girls with the Aaron Bodie Group. Coming off that conversation with Scott Stiegemeyer about the Golden Compass movie, it's coming out whether you want it to or not, and it's going to make money. There's no doubt about it. If you watch the trailer, if you've seen the trailer either online or when you went to a movie lately, it's, boy howdy, it's one of the kind of things that if I'm a 12-year-old kid, girl or boy, I'm going to go see it because it's visually amazing. Should Christians see it? Should they boycott it? Should they maybe say, if you're over 16... discerning mind, go see it under that inadvisable. I want your thoughts. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Just under 10 minutes left here in Issues Etc. Today, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Are you planning to see it? That's a good question. Charlie's calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I'm kind of going back and forth on this whole thing. The two poles are kind of this. One is, I serve the youth of my congregation here as a pastor, and I know that some of them are going to see it, and I would like to be able to provide some guidance, you know, so that they don't just go to it without knowing something about it. So I've thought about maybe even going as a group and then discussing it afterward. But on the other hand, do I really want to encourage anyone to spend money that, you know, somewhere down the line is going to make it to this guy in terms of royalties?
So, okay, I didn't expect you to go there in your last part of your comment. So for you, it's really, do I want to support Philip Pullman directly or indirectly by going to see the movie based on his films?
Yeah, that's a big issue for me.
Well, I guess you could. I mean, I don't want to. I don't know for sure, but I imagine that if he was smart, he would have somehow tied his royalties to the film. But it may be well that someone bought it right out from under him, and he's not going to see another penny. He's already been paid, so that might be answered, you know, just with simple economics. Would you have concerns about seeing it yourself, apart from your considerations of, you know, do I want to put money into Pullman's pocket?
Well, in that way, I think I'd approach it like a movie like The Da Vinci Code. If you're firmly grounded in the faith and you've educated yourself about it and you're going into it with your eyes wide open, then I think that, you know, you're not in any undue danger. You're going to see the things as they come. You're going to be able to respond to them in faith. And it might actually enable you to effectively, you know, help other people with it who might see it without that grounding. But it's not something that I think I would recommend anyone see who wasn't grounded in the faith. So on that level, I'm not too worried about the youth at my congregation, but I would still be concerned about them if they, you know, had no sort of guidance. And so that's kind of where I'm going back and forth, trying to discern what the best thing for these kids would be.
Charlie, thank you very much, and thanks for listening out in Colorado. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. I went to see a movie the other night with my daughter. She'd actually seen it before and came back saying, "Dad, you got to see this." She knows full well that her dad is a, you know, don't hold it against me, I'm a fan of the horror genre. Stephen King got a new movie out called The Mist. You've probably seen the trailer at some point for it. My wife won't even watch the trailer. My daughter says, "You got to see this. It's a great horror movie," and she's a smart girl. She knows what makes a good stem-winding, page-turning story when it comes to that kind of stuff. Now, one of the things I wasn't expecting, although I was expecting it a little because I'd heard a review of The Mist, was that a big part of this film engaged the whole issue of Christians, crazy or otherwise, fearing the end times and a wrathful God. It was a big part of the film. And if I weren't feeling generous towards Stephen King, I'd say he might have had an axe to grind against Christianity. Of course, it's hard to avoid that stuff nowadays. Well, the Roman Catholic Church really isn't thrilled with the whole idea of the Golden Compass. Here's more from CBS, The Early Show.
Well, the blockbuster movie The Golden Compass, which opens December 5th here in the United States, has been compared to other children's fantasies like The Chronicles of Narnia and Harry Potter. But the difference is that the book it's based on was written by an atheist, and for some religious conservatives, that's a big problem. CBS News correspondent Richard Roth reports.
It's the Golden Compass, Lyra.
With an A-list cast and dazzling special effects, it's a big-budget adventure some critics claim could be pointing children in the wrong direction. Based on a book that's been called anti-Catholic, The Golden Compass tells the story of a young girl's battle against a sinister group seeking to rule the world, a mysterious organization steeped in spiritual overtones.
That is the magisterial seat, Lyra.
The controversy now has the studio spinning The Golden Compass as a celebration of love and friendship, as the glamorous villain with a soul of ice, Nicole Kidman's rejecting the claim that the movie's message is anti-church.
I don't see it as that, but obviously it's up for interpretation, but I would be surprised if people actually saw the film and felt that.
The Catholic League's called for a boycott, On opening night here, for some of the cast, that amounted to a challenge.
You know what? If they do, tough. They're going to lose out. We're not going to lose out. They're going to lose out.
I think the Catholic Church will survive. It's survived much worse things than this.
In fact, much of the argument's less about the movie than the book behind it, and author Philip Pullman, who's not stepping back from a fight.
Religion is at its best when it is furthest away from power. As soon as it gets its hand on power, religion and power don't mix.
What's clear in all this is that controversy builds curiosity, which hardly ever hurts at the box office. Richard Roth, CBS News, London.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess boycotts always have a tendency to turn on the interest, and usually that turns up the box office. You know, this goes not only for something like the Golden Compass, but also for the kind of recent popular attacks of atheism on religion and Christianity. Think about it this way. What's the best response? There's an old saying, you probably heard it, the best revenge is living well. Let's change that just a little bit. The best response to these kind of attacks, subtle or overt or polite or impolite, is living well. And by that I mean, where the atheists are right, then the church, about what the church is, and they are right about what the church is sometimes. That is, when the atheists accuse us of being exclusive, of trusting in a God who would sacrifice his own son to pay the price for the sins of the world, and they find that ridiculous, you know what the response of the church is? The church shouldn't say, no, 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 that's not who we are. The church should say, you're right, that's who we are. We do trust in a God who sacrifices his own son out of love for a world of enemies and sinners to redeem them and bring them back, and raises that son from the dead to assure us of our salvation. When they accuse us of being exclusive, that there's only one way of salvation, you know what we say? We say, you know what, atheists? You're right. That's exactly what we believe. When the atheists are right about what Christians believe, then the Christians should be what they say. Where the atheists are wrong about what Christians believe, and they are wrong sometimes too, aren't they? Then we shouldn't be what they say we are wrongly. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is a Christmas book for your kids, grandkids, godchildren, great Christmas gift called What Happened to Merry Christmas. Find out about it at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask them about What Happened to Merry Christmas. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. Tomorrow on the program, does 2 Thessalonians 2:6-8 teach a secret, sudden, pre-tribulation rapture of the church? So many people say it does. We'll see what Pastor Brent McGuire says in answer to that question. We'll also discuss tomorrow on the program, Noah. Dr. Andrew Steinman will join us. Then Friday, we got a very interesting review of Joel Osteen's bestseller called Become a Better You. Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest for a two-hour review of Joel Osteen's book, Become a Better You. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.